Okay, ladies and gentlemen, look, thank you very much for dialing in. Welcome to this Science Media Centre briefing on healthy foods and the government services tax, GST. We have two speakers for you today on this issue, both of whom have done extensive research in the areas of public health and nutrition. Now, our speakers will talk for about 10 minutes each today, and then we'll open things up for Q&A at the end. So please keep your questions for the end of the session. This entire presentation will be recorded and posted to our website straight after the presentation, so you'll be able to listen back to it, and the slides that you see presented today are available in the resource library off our website. Also available is the so-called SHOP study, which our speakers will be referring to today. That has been uploaded to the resource library as well, so if you have a login, you can log into our website to access that. If you have any problems here, just let us know. So, to introduce our speakers, our first speaker is Dr. Kiana Nimoku. She is the Program Leader for Nutrition Research at the University of Auckland's Clinical Trials Research Unit, and she has led several large research studies, including SHOP, which is the Supermarket Healthy Options Project, which evaluated the effectiveness of price discounts and nutrition education as strategies to promote healthier food purchases. She is Director of the Health Research Council Program, Population Interventions to Improve Nutrition and Physical Activity, and later this year we'll take up the Heart Foundation of New Zealand Senior Fellowship. After that we'll have Bronwyn King from the Community and Public Health Organisation in Christchurch. She's a public health nutritionist, and she's been in that role for 11 years. She's also the former chairperson of the Obesity Action Coalition, which is a strong advocate for environments that support healthy lifestyles. She's been a writer for Healthy Food Guide magazine and managing director of FoodFit, Food and Nutrition Education and Consultancy. In addition, she's been involved in other work, including producing and presenting her own TV series down in Canterbury called Healthy Eating. So I'll hand over now to Kiana to kick off.
Okay, thank you. Good morning, everybody. I'm going to run through a few slides just to tell you briefly about what we call the Supermarket Healthy Options Project at SHOP, which was a research project, a New Zealand study that was conducted over a period of 2 years between 2008 and 2009. And it involved just over 1,100 shoppers at 8 pack and save stores in the North Island of New Zealand. And essentially, SHOP came about because we were interested in ways of promoting healthier supermarket food purchases. And this was largely because we know that more than two-thirds of the money we spend on food in New Zealand is spent in supermarkets. But equally, there's a lot of evidence that suggests that people are not always making healthy choices at supermarkets. For example, for staple foods like bread, milk, and spreads, we know that the market leaders are actually the least healthy options, like white breads, standard or dark blue milk, and butter. So the aim of the SHOP trial was to look at the effectiveness of two specific strategies to promote healthier supermarket food purchases, and they were price discounts and what we call tailored or highly personalized nutrition education. So the shoppers taking part in the trial were randomized to one of four groups. The first group got price discounts on healthier foods. The second group got tailored nutrition education. The third group got a combination of the two. And the fourth group was the control group and didn't actually get any intervention. We used individualized electronic sales data to both tailor or personalize the nutrition education that we gave people, but also to measure the effect of the interventions over the period of the study. And everybody in the study was followed for a period of 15 months so that we could assess the long-term effects of pricing and education. So to start with the kind of nutrition education that we used in the trial, here are some examples of some of the education messages that we gave shoppers who were randomized to receive this tailored or personalized nutrition education. As you can see, they were based on what people normally bought at the supermarket, so we used the sales data to ensure that the messages that we gave people were relevant. We identified healthier options, and We also made it clear to people that in most cases the healthier options were either the same price or cheaper than the less healthy options that they were currently buying in the supermarkets. The people in the trial who received the price discounts, the price discount level was set at 12.5%, and the discounts were applied to all healthier foods within the top-selling range of foods in pack and save supermarkets. And the price discounts, people were informed about them. We sent them a printed list to all the people who got the price discounts once they were randomized, telling them what foods were eligible for discounts. And then once they scanned their card through the checkout, the discounts were applied automatically then. So the study, as I said, was run in 8 supermarket stores in socioeconomically diverse regions of the Upper North Island in New Zealand. And we used a system that's called the Shop and Go system, which are a system of handheld barcode scanners, which you may have seen in pack and save stores. So we used that system to basically assess what people taking part in the study were buying throughout the study. So at the start of the study, we recruited 1,100 shoppers, 22% of whom were Māori and 9% were Pacific. And those 1,100 shoppers were then randomized to one of the 4 groups that I described earlier. And that gave us, in effect, more than 550 people who were randomized to either discounts or nutrition education. So good numbers to be able to work out the effectiveness of each of the interventions. In terms of outcomes, we were initially interested in the saturated fat content of what people were buying, but we also looked at a range of other nutrients and how they changed over 6 and 12 months. And we also looked at how the quantity of healthier foods changed over the 6-month intervention and then then 6 months later following intervention. When we examined saturated fat, which was our primary study outcome, what the graph that you can see there in front of you shows is that at baseline and the intervention period and at follow-up, there were actually no differences between discounts, education, and control groups at any stage. So what that told us was that neither price discounts nor education actually had a significant effect on the saturated fat profile of what people bought during the trial. And when we did similar analyses for other nutrients, we actually found no effect on other nutrients. On the other hand, when we looked at the quantities of healthier foods that people were buying, what we did see was a significant increase in the quantities of healthier foods that were bought by shoppers who got the price discounts. And this was true for all healthy foods combined, as well as fruit and vegetables as a subgroup of that, which made up about 2/3 of healthy foods by weight. And interestingly, we found that people continued to buy more healthy foods even after the discounts ended. But in contrast, we saw no effect of education on people's food purchasing patterns at either 6 or 12 months. So the effects that we saw due to the price discounts were equivalent to households buying about an extra 0.5 kilo or 6 portions more of fruit and vegetables a week during the intervention period. And compared to baseline, that was an 11% increase on fruit and vegetable purchases for people who were getting the discounts. So overall, the SHOP study findings suggest that pricing strategies can promote healthier food purchases and that we should not rely exclusively on education and personal responsibility, I think, to improve New Zealanders' diets. And just to finish, I'd just like to acknowledge the whole SHOP research team because it was a consortium of people at the University of Auckland and Otago and Te Huatu Manawa Māori and the Pacific Island Heartbeat Unit. And, of course, it was done in collaboration with Foodstuffs Wellington and Pack and Save too.
That's excellent. Thank you, Kiana. I'll hand over now to Bronwyn. Are you there, Bronwyn? Can you hear me, Bowen? Let's just see if we have a problem here. Okay. Are you there, Bowen? Hello? Oh. Sorry, are you there, Bowen?
Yep.
Sorry about that. Go ahead.
I haven't got my slide up yet.
Okay.
It's just loading.
There we go.
Okay, so I can just start?
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay, thank you, Fiona, and good morning, everybody. I'm going to provide a population health perspective to changing the pricing structure around healthy food. And I'm going to start by looking at population health goals, which, when the next slide comes up, essentially this is to make healthy food the most attractive, available, and affordable. And currently it seems that unhealthy foods are the most attractive, available, and affordable. And I think the soaring profits of restaurant brands is just one indicator of how popular less healthy food is becoming. And current price structure is not helping. A recent five-year study in Queensland showed that the price of fruit and vegetables increased at a much faster rate than junk foods. 31% increase for confectionery, which is slightly less than the rate of inflation, compared with 112% increase for fruit, and that's in a fruit-growing economy. And the same appears to be happening in New Zealand, as the Green Party highlighted recently. Our current government, in my view, is not doing nearly enough to promote healthy eating. It has cut almost all the healthy eating programs set up by the Labor government, instead pushing education and personal responsibility. The best it seems to come up with is gastric bypass surgery, a real bottom-of-the-cliff type intervention. Anything else they see as nanny state, which effectively strangles rational debate. So improving population health is most successful when a range of strategies is applied at government, community, and personal levels. Anyone who works in population knows that we need to look at healthy policy, we need to provide appropriate support services, we need community buy-in and involvement, we need environments and structures set up to support, and a baseline of really healthy education. For example, educating children about healthy eating in schools will have little impact unless the school has a food policy, the canteen or lunch service supports this, and teachers, parents, and communities are behind it. Oh, sorry, I have suddenly gone out of this. Are you there?
Yeah. Yes, Bronwyn.
Okay, sorry. Yep. Next slide. Take milk, for example. Most people know that milk is really good for our bones and teeth, but unless milk is priced attractively, it's unaffordable for many people. And it's not about a knowledge deficit, and it's not about being irresponsible. It's simply lack of choice. This is an example where education and personal responsibility is not enough. It can only result in healthy behaviour if the environment is supportive. In other words, if milk is affordable for all. By not having a supportive environment as exists today, poorer people are going to be at a much greater risk of tooth decay and osteoporosis. And both of these have very huge economic and personal costs. With soft drink less than half the price of milk, it's not surprising that people on low income buy this instead of milk. The shop study really shows that price is a powerful tool. And we know that price is a powerful tool and a key determinant of purchase choice. We really see this with tobacco and alcohol. The shop study shows very, very clearly that price does influence purchase decisions. Education alone did not affect change. Even a small increase in healthy food purchase, as demonstrated by the study, will bring significant health gain. And the sort of game we're looking at better learning for children. Children learn much better when they have a good, healthy diet. Iron and iodine in particular are necessary for brain development and growth. Many Kiwi kids do not get enough of these very important nutrients and as such do not reach their intellectual potential. A better diet means kids concentrate and behave better at school, which in turn means better learning. Improved mental health. So many people do not make the connection between what they eat and how they feel. Heavy fatty foods make you feel sluggish and tired, while a healthy diet improves mood and energy levels. Omega-3 is receiving increasing interest around its effects on mental health. Many believe that depression, ADD, aggressive behavior, and other mental health disorders are linked to a lack of omega-3. Since fish is our best source of this in New Zealand, and since the price of fish prohibits purchase for all but the rich, many New Zealanders are at risk of mental health issues. This means more people in jail, more suicides, not to mention more antidepressants. It means less obesity and overweight. Our current diet and environment is described as obesogenic, meaning it promotes obesity and overweight. Apart from the pain and suffering that the resulting chronic diseases deliver, the associated healthcare costs will be astronomical. A year of dialysis, for example, which is a long-term consequence of type 2 diabetes, costs more than $40,000. Now that we're seeing children get this disease, and it used to be called adult-onset diabetes because we only saw it in adults, it has the potential to cripple the health budget. With more than two-thirds of New Zealand men and half of New Zealand women above a healthy weight, unless drastic measures are taken soon, we'll all pay the cost. Gastric bypass surgery seems to be the solution at the moment, and at about $28,000 to $35,000 per operation, the state will not be able to meet the demand, and few will be able to afford it personally. Better bones and teeth. With soft drink around half the price of milk, we can expect to see the results of a low-calcium diet, and this is poor teeth and bones. And osteoporosis is a huge cause of suffering in later life, yet avoidable if you lead a healthy lifestyle. We will have a more efficient and able health service. Unless we do something soon to turn around the rates of obesity and ill health, our health system will not cope. This will mean huge waiting lists, which will again impact more on the poor. I believe access to healthy food should be a right and not a luxury for all New Zealanders. Food has never been a discretionary purchase and never should be. Britain doesn't have a GST on food and Australia doesn't have it on most core food items. And this is because they consider healthy food a right, not a choice. New Zealanders should have the same privilege. Healthy food should be accessible and affordable for all. Otherwise, we're going to see the consequences. A dumbed-down, overweight nation, epidemic levels of type 2 diabetes and other chronic disease, an overburdened health system with huge waiting lists, overflowing prisons, increasing crime, depression and suicide, decreasing population due to decreased fertility, and our children not reaching their full potential. The SHOP study shows that a relatively simple intervention can influence healthy food purchase. While removing GST from healthy foods may be considered a difficult and costly task by government, there is increasing evidence to show that governments that do not put strategies in place to prevent ill health pay the price many times over in the future. For health gain, education and personal responsibility must be supported by a range of proven strategies. Wellness should be at the forefront of efforts to improve health. Creating a fairer price structure around essential food items is a proven effective strategy. The government must decide if health spend is a cost or an investment. Do we want to pay for an expanding fleet of ambulances at the bottom of the cliff or take steps now to invest in a healthy, productive population? It's time for us to enter the debate.
Okay, Bowen, I think that's it then, is it?
That's it.
Brilliant. Okay, what I'll do now is I'm just going to unmute everyone on the conference, so things may get slightly noisy as background noise sets in, but we're opening it up for Q&A now, so if you have any questions, feel free to ask them. If you can please state your organisation and name before you do so. So go ahead if there are any questions from the conference.
Yeah, hi there. It's Shane Kalishaw from the Christchurch Press.
Go ahead, Shane.
Yeah, just wondering, I mean, how exactly how exactly do you see, what is healthy food and how are we going to define that? For example, say milk, flour, eggs, I mean, those ingredients could all be defined as healthy, but they're all the main ingredients in, say, pies and stuff. So could you see, like, that leading to, you know, see unhealthy things coming down in price as well?
I think that, it's Kiona here, I think there are ways of doing it. Certainly one way of doing it is to try and do as you've suggested, which is to try and identify core foods. I mean, things like milk and flour may well be in pies, but it's not the milk and flour that are making pies unhealthy, it's the added fat and salt. One way that we can do it is to use what are called nutrient profiling systems or food classification systems. And an example of those is the Pick the Tick system that the Heart Foundation uses. There's also a Food Standards Australia New Zealand system that's used to determine what foods are eligible to carry health claims. And essentially, these kinds of systems are based on a range of criteria that basically identify whether a food can, in total, be considered healthy or less healthy. So the systems are there. They're not necessarily being used for this purpose, but they're being used for other purposes, and they could well be modified for something like this.
Right. I just wondered that, you know, since obviously the milk and the flour are not the unhealthy ingredients in a pie, but bringing them down in price, wouldn't that naturally bring down the price of a pie as well?
Well, I don't know how it actually works, but I mean, it may, but the thing is, what it should do... what it should do is mean that the core foods that don't have other added ingredients become relatively cheaper. And it's not so much, I mean, if we're talking about healthy food, what we really want to do is create a differential between healthy and less healthy options. And I think that would probably be the key to ensure that there is a meaningful price difference between healthy and less healthy options.
Thanks.
Thanks, Shani. Any other questions here?
It's Natasha from Newport TV.
Go ahead.
Something else, I actually got logged off by mistake partway through the conference, sort of towards the beginning. I'm just wondering if Cleona can just quickly summarise the findings of the study.
Of the shop study?
Yes, that's right.
Yep. Essentially what we found was that the price discounts had a significant and measurable effect on the quantities of healthier foods that people bought. And that caused an increase of about 11% while people were getting the price discounts of 12.5%. Even when we took the price discounts away, there was a smaller but still significant increase in those healthier foods that were being purchased 6 months after the discounts ended. We didn't find an effect on the overall nutrient profile of the shopping basket. So although people were buying more healthy foods, it didn't translate into a change in the overall profile, I guess, of what was going into people's baskets. But in contrast, what we did find is that education produced no effect on either healthier food purchases or nutrients at either 6 or 12 months, so we couldn't see anything in response to the education we were delivering.
Okay, when you talk about the increase of 11%, you mean 11% more healthy food purchased?
Yeah, that was by weight. So that's in terms of kilos. It translated into, I mean, if you just think about fruit and vegetables, it translated into about an extra half a kilo of fruit and vegetables per household each week during the price discounts.
Thanks very much.
Okay, thanks, Natasha. Any other questions here?
Yeah, I've got a question, Peter. It's Will here from Radio New Zealand.
Go ahead, Will.
Hey, are there responsibilities on other parts of the sector, say with the example of milk, is Fonterra perhaps overpricing milk in the domestic market? Have you looked at that sort of issue?
We haven't looked at that. I mean, obviously Shop was focused very much at the retail end of what people buy in supermarkets, but I think you make a good point because we're talking about pricing strategies in relation to GST or making healthy foods cheaper, but actually another way of doing it is to look further upstream and look at how producers might be able to make healthier food cheaper at the production level before it even gets to retail.
Okay, and I've got another question as well. What's the feedback been from the Health Ministry, from the Health Minister, about these proposals of dropping GST on healthy food?
Well, I can't comment on the overall debate that's going on in the media at the moment, but we haven't had any direct response from the Minister in relation to the SHOP study, at least.
Okay, do you have any idea how much the GST take is on these healthy foods, how much revenue would have to be found elsewhere if this GST was taken away?
I don't know off the top of my head, but I think more work does need to be done to look at that in terms of the cost effectiveness, because once again, we're talking about removing GST from food, but it may be that there may be more cost-effective options as well to make healthier foods cheaper, whether it's working upstream at the production end or whether it's looking at more targeted subsidies, like perhaps subsidising low-income New Zealanders rather than removal of GST across the population as a whole. And I think cost-effectiveness is going to be a key determinant of selection of whatever strategy might be used.
I'd just like to add, it's Brumman here, I'd just like to add a comment here too, that Phil Goff made a comment earlier in the year that the cost of removing GST could be covered by the tobacco excise.
Okay.
This is a question, it's Natasha from UCCB again, for Bronwyn or Cleona. I'm just wondering how much money you think would be saved in the health system if we did eat more healthy food.
Okay. I don't know. Cleona, would you like to start on that one? It's pretty a difficult question.
It is difficult, but it's very relevant because actually it's the next phase of the research that we want to do, because we've shown that that pricing strategies can impact on the quantity of foods that people buy and the types of foods that people buy. But obviously, a more important question in a way is what impact do those changes actually have on population health and long-term healthcare costs? And we're hoping over the next 2 to 3 years to actually be able to answer that question a lot more comprehensively.
Thanks very much.
Shane here at the press again. Just wondering, in the SHOP study, did you notice at all over time that when people were getting these discounts and they were saving a bit of money in their shop, did they go like, oh, hey, we've got an extra $10 a week, let's buy an extra bowl of Coke or a bag of chips or whatever? Was there anything like that, or did they use that money to buy more healthy food only?
Yeah, we did look at that, and what we found was that alongside the increase we saw in healthier foods, we actually didn't see any significant change in the less healthy foods that were purchased. So we grouped all of the other foods into a less healthy category, and that didn't change. So it looked as if people were using the discounts to buy more healthy food and not necessarily using them to buy less healthy food.
It's Will here again. I might have missed this. This SHOP study, was this purely with low-income families or households, or was it across the spectrum?
It was across the spectrum. In fact, it was pretty evenly split, about 50-50 between low-income and high-income. We tried to recruit as diverse a population as possible, and it did look like it was a fairly even split income-wise. Ethnicity-wise, it was dominated by New Zealand Europeans.
Cleona, this is Virginia McMillan from New Zealand Doctor. Are you going to use that same study population for your next lot of work?
The next lot of work will be, it won't be done in a trial like SHOP. It will actually be done using existing New Zealand data around from the New Zealand Household Economic Survey and existing data around New Zealand mortality statistics and risk of chronic diseases and obesity levels. So what we're going to be doing is basically linking together a lot of different existing data and modelling the impact that different fiscal policy options might have on health outcomes.
Thank you.
Yeah, hi, it's Kingi here from the Te Karere program at TVNZ. My question is, for either for both speakers, Bronwyn and Cleona, how finicky do you think it will be determining what products would get a cut in GST?
It's Cleona here. I think, as I said earlier, I think it can be relatively straightforward because of the fact that there are actually systems in existence that have been trialled very extensively. Not necessarily for this purpose, as I said, but certainly the Food Standards Australia New Zealand health claims calculator has been tested very extensively in terms of being able to identify foods that are considered healthy enough to be able to carry health claims. So there are objective systems and you know, calculators in existence that should be able to tell us quite objectively whether a food could be GST exempt or not.
And I'd just like to add here too that Australia has already done this. It has doesn't have GST on a range of core foods, so we do have some excellent modelling to look at. You know, while it may be a difficult task, I think it's a really important task, and if the will is there, I think we can certainly find a way. It's very easy to put taxes onto foods. It seems to be much more difficult to take things off.
So when you say calculators, you're talking about like the Heart Foundation tick and things like that, eh?
The tick is one example, and there are a range of other systems. But yes, the tick is one way of doing it. But Food Standards Australia and New Zealand also have another system.
Just Shane here at the press again. Just a quick question. Is this a University of Auckland funded study, the SHOP study?
No, the SHOP study was funded by the Health Research Council of New Zealand, and we did also get some staffing support from the National Heart Foundation.
Okay, thanks.
Okay, thanks, Shane. Any other questions there? Maybe I'll just...
Will from Radio New Zealand again. Just can I get Cleona just to say her name, how that pronunciation goes?
It's Cleona Niwiriku.
Okay. Thank you.
Just finally, Bronwyn, just a question. I'm interested in, you talked a bit about Australia and the UK. Is there an example out there of a country that has removed a sales tax from healthy food and measured the outcome of that?
I don't know of one. I mean, this is one of the difficulties with New Zealand is that we've already got a GST structure in place, and it's much more difficult changing a known structure, whereas Britain and Australia set up their systems right from the start with GST exempt totally from food in Britain and off certain core items in Australia. I don't know of a country that has done what, you know, we will obviously have to do here.
Okay. Thanks for that. That's what I thought, yeah. Okay, if there's no other questions, I think we'll wrap up there. As I said, the recording of the briefing will be posted to the website, so any of those who missed out on the start of it or booted out accidentally in the middle of it, you'll be able to listen back to it in full in about half an hour or so. All the slides are up there, including the SHOP study. If you want to have a look at the bill that's going to be introduced into Parliament next week, just talk to the press office at the Maori Party. They are making that available. So I'd just like to wrap up by thanking Cleona and Bronwyn for their time. Cleona is actually dialing in from the UK, so if you'd like to interview her, she really only has maybe 45 minutes or so maximum to do that, so call the SMC here if you'd like to line something up with her. Bronwyn is available as well this afternoon, so contact us as well if you'd like to talk to Bronwyn. So thanks very much to our speakers for their time. Thanks very much to you for your questions, and look forward to having you in a briefing again sometime soon. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Peter.
Bye. Thank you.